Some people think they're God.
N-I-L.
You're going to see more transfers, more mistakes made in recruiting.
Big Chris Drew.
You're taking shots at 17-year-old kids and their families.
Chris Drew, Daddy.
Let them be commit 100 times.
Texas A&M bought their players.
We bought every player on this group. When people show you who they are, believe it.
All the NIL did was made it legal for student athletes to get paid. Because this has been going on for the longest time. And then the really big school came in and built a damn house around the microwave and refrigerator.
They did.
A baseball card.
Yep.
So now all of a sudden, Coach Saban, Texas A&M, every guy they got. So you mean to tell me the man that signed more 5-4 and 5-star recruits than everybody went there because they love Alabama?
Like I told y'all before, I did not feel the fucking energy when we went outside to warm up. The fucking stadium's dead as fuck, and we gotta create our own fucking energy. Now we're out there playing like pussies. They are not better than us. We gonna turn up this second half, and I'm gonna punch that fucking ticket, cause this is my last fucking year. I'll die on that field of fucking day, man. I ain't got but one more time. Hey, serious, we ain't got but one more fucking time. What you gonna be made of?
That clip was important for me to play one more time. First of all, Curtis Grant's incredible. He's the GOAT. Zach's been telling us for a long time about the kind of leader he is, and I don't think a lot of people have seen that except for the players that were in that locker room, because a lot of the stuff we never hear about till years after the fact. That was Curtis Grant speaking. This is my biggest question mark for that team. Curtis's last sentence there from 2014. What are we made of? And I know a lot of people are going to say the biggest question mark has to be the defense, which is fair. That's fine. You know, people having question marks about replacing receivers or the linebackers or the safety play. People have questions about fixing things. But my biggest question is about what is this team made of as a whole? Now, obviously, Zach goes into detail a lot about kind of leadership and what it looks like. But if we go back to last year, the one thing that wasn't there at any point was that real dog in you leadership. Anybody can get in front of a team and try to hype them up and mention this and mention that and be a quote-unquote leader. But what Curtis Grant is saying there is the ultimate version of leadership. And that is my biggest question mark for this team. Because I firmly believe having an excellent leader takes you from a two-loss team to an undefeated team or a two-loss team to a one-loss team and takes a one-score game that you may lose into a game that you win. And Zach challenged me a little bit because I was a tad confused like when he said, you know, the reason we haven't won a title, da-da-da-da-da. And for me, it's like, okay, the reason we haven't won a title, it's easy to point to. Defense was soft. You know, they got pushed around schematically. Kerry Combs' fault. That's it. You know, it's Kerry Combs. That's why we didn't win shit. Or, 2019. Well, Sean Wade got ejected. That's why we didn't win a chip. Or, the refs cost us a chip. At least a shot at a chip. Or COVID got us there. And I've fallen into the cycle that I'm sure a lot of us have of kind of making excuses. But then I look back at each one of those teams. None of those teams had that. None of those teams had Curtis. But Chris, the defense. I'm not so worried about the defense at all. I'll say that in a vacuum. I'm not worried about the defense. Because when I see Jim Knowles speak, and when I hear what other coaches have said about him in particular, my conversation with Kevin Wilson was really eye-opening for me at least. I was telling Zach, he was saying stuff that was way over my head. You know, football acumen, when people start throwing that word around, it's like, okay, like it's serious. And last year, I think Kerry Combs was so incompetent, that they couldn't get anything done. And there was no meanness out there. And there was nobody to kind of cement that and basically say what Curtis said. Fuck that. Fuck the coaches. Fuck the stadium. Fuck all that. We need to be our very fucking best. If Curtis was out there last year, nobody's getting pushed around. I don't care. Oh, but what about Mickey Marotti? No. Having a guy like that solves that culture thing immediately. Immediately. When you have a guy like that, the culture cannot get soft at all. Now, I don't think that there is a Curtis Grant on this team. But there has to be a sliver of something, right? Curtis Grant is the best leader that Ohio State's had since the Urban Meyer era. The best one, hands down. But what about JT Barrett? No. But what? No. And you know how I know? Because in that video that Curtis Grant is speaking in front of the team, talking about, I'm punching my fucking ticket, no matter fucking what, that refusal, to lose at all, I look at the guys on that team that were looking him in his eyes, square-jawed, and watching the goosebumps go to them too. And a guy that's always viewed and talked about as a leader, front and center, feeling it, eyes locked the entire time, Mr. Evan Spencer. So for me, it's like, okay, that dude has that guy's respect. I mean, Raekwon McMillan was on that team. Very, very good player. Curtis Grant played a lot because that's how good Curtis Grant was. As a leader and a dog. And it's funny because, like, Zach and I have obviously been harping on this. But we're harping on this because we want someone to hear. We want it to matter. We want it to mean something. And looking back, like I said, at the previous seasons, we didn't have that. So, dear Ohio State captains, be that. Now, I wish it was that easy. I don't know if it's that easy. You know, there's some debate if you can be born with that dog in you or something that can be coached in, or if it's, you know, how you grow up, this, that. I don't care what it is, but it has to happen because JSN basically said anything short of a national title is considered a failure in his eyes. And quite frankly, I might agree, and I try not to do that, but I might agree. It depends. And it depends on one guy in particular. Just want to really quickly touch on this. The value of Nick Saban. Nick Saban got a contract extension. Alabama, $93.6 million. It is confirmed. Saban will coach forever and be a thorn in my fucking side for a long time. Shit pisses me off. But I understand that in this college football world, like, I think Ryan Day can be the next best coach in college football. But it's not something I think that he's going to get just from Saban stepping down and retiring. I think he's going to have to go take that and force the issue. And honestly, this team feels generational to me, and so I think this will be the team to force the issue if they do have that Curtis Grant type, or at least 25% of Curtis Grant. So there's something to keep an eye on. And my guy Josh Pate had something to say, and it kind of rubbed me the wrong way, talking about Nick Saban and the effect he's had on the SEC, which I agree to a degree, but it's a little bit ridiculous how far Zach's guy took it.
Take a look at this graphic of the folks he's run out of this conference. Again, I cannot stress enough. In the words of Dan Lust, one of the great legal minds on social media, assault. This is assault. Look at these names. Phil Fulmer's there. Urban's there. Les Miles, Spurrier, Derek Dooley. There's all kinds of Tennessee coloring here. Gus Malzahn, Muschamp, remember him? Does anyone remember Hugh Freeze? The Jim McElwain era at Florida? Does anyone remember Les Miles at LSU? Saban has seen them all come and go. Jeremy Pruitt at Tennessee, Ed Orgeron, even after that fiery speech post-2019 at LSU. And then, since there were only 31 of them, but we had 32 slots, we just added in more to come.
Now, I like Josh Pate a lot. That was from him. And he put up a graphic, obviously, of all the coaches that Nick Saban, quote-unquote, ran out of the SEC. And it really, it was just every coach that got fired during his tenure there. And now, I like Josh Pate a lot. I think his takes lately have been a little up there. And here's my issue with this take in particular. So he pulled up this list of coaches that so-and-so ran out. And I would almost agree with him, except for the fact that I don't believe that he ran them out. I believe the conference ran them out. So the way this is kind of laid out nationally, the phrase is true, despite what you think. The SEC, it does just mean more. And it's not that he was running guys out of town. It's that guys weren't living up to the standard that is SEC football, which is much different than the Big Ten. Because it's so serious down there, because of how boosters are down there, there is added pressure. Schools down there, and it was like this before he got there. Schools down there can't have X amount of bad seasons in a row and expect to have a job. That wasn't something that Nick Saban changed when he came to the SEC. That's generally how it's been, which is why even before Saban, the SEC was better than everybody else. And again, with this list, when you run people out of places, quote unquote, the assumption is, okay, these people couldn't be successful there, so they got run out like that. No. It wasn't because they weren't. Saban wasn't blocking a lot of these people from success. Well, he blocked some of them from success. But a lot of them still got to the top of that mountain. He wasn't denying championships. I would argue he didn't deny anybody a championship. If you look at the coaches that that Josh Pate said that he ran out, Urban Meyer, he got his rings. And things ended the way they did because of the health concerns, whatever. Ed Orgeron, he got his ring in 2019. Dan Mullen, he was successful there, but Dan Mullen didn't get run out by Nick Saban. Things imploded for Dan because he's a bitch. Like, guys won. Kevin Sumlin ended up winning the conference his very first year in the SEC. I wouldn't classify that as Nick Saban running him out. Like, guys had success. It's really not about Nick Saban running guys out. It's about the SEC just being a cut above in terms of expectations. Is Nick Saban the GOAT? Oh, absolutely. Won't argue with that. But to say he ran off coaches like Urban Meyer, who got his rings, like Kevin Sumlin, who got his. Kevin Sumlin was run up by the boosters. In fact, I would argue that if these schools, if these individual coaches, if their biggest flaw was that they couldn't beat Saban, I would argue that no one would have lost their job. You don't lose your job for not beating Saban. You lose your job because you're a bitch and the locker room fractures. You screw your head, you screw all your other coaches, and you basically give up in the middle of the season. Cough, cough, I'm talking to you, Dan Mullen. Ed Orgeron, like, you didn't lose your job because you lost to Nick Saban too many times. You lost your job because of the dysfunction and players not buying in. Hugh Freeze, you didn't lose your job because you couldn't beat Nick Saban, because I believe you did. You lost your job because it was a shit show and you couldn't get things done. Even Mark Richt. Mark Richt lost his job. He moved on. But it wasn't because maybe that could be the one that it was about beating Saban. But Mark Richt got his successful coach. I mean, a lot of these coaches on this list, Dan Mullen, Ed Orgeron, Jeremy Pruitt, Gus Malzahn, there was other stuff going on rather than them not being able to beat Saban, considering they did and they would. Now, I like Josh Pate a lot. I just think it's a bad take, and it's an interesting discussion, but really I would argue that it's more about the SEC and the expectation there versus a place like the Big Ten or the Pac-12. And then I would argue that all those guys, like, if they all did their job really, really good, like, if they did a really good job and the one thing they couldn't do was beat Nick Saban, they would all still be there. How do I know this? Cough, cough, because there's a guy named Kirby Smart who, for a while, he couldn't win the big one. He didn't get run out because he couldn't beat Nick Saban. He kept getting shots at it and got over the hump. So that's my take on that. I like Josh Pate. It's not our dumbass sports media personality of the week, just because we love Josh over here. But I do think it was a bad take. Now, I do want to move on. I want to talk a little bit about two schools that I believe are in similar classes and should be recognized as such. I was talking earlier today with a Notre Dame person, and then I was also talking with Zach the other day, listening to Zach talk about Notre Dame, how they're 44-7 since 2018. And it's funny because Notre Dame fans and Notre Dame as a whole gets absolutely shitted on whenever anybody gets a chance. Zero playoff wins. None of them. Can't win any major games. Super overrated. I do think they're going to get boat raced week one, and I'm counting down to it. But it's funny because all those same things, it's easy to hate Notre Dame, because they do feel like, oh, we're so much better than everybody else. Also, speaking of Notre Dame, what are we, like 9 days away? Hint, hint, wink, wink. It's so fun to hate Notre Dame, but since 2018, they're 44-7. With major losses to all top 10 teams. Zach pointed that out. Zach told us, so I'm not going to harp on that too much. What I think is interesting is they have zero unranked losses. No bad losses since 2018. I would argue that they are a better program, a higher achieving program than Oklahoma.
But Chris, Oklahoma, da-da-da.
Think about what I said there. Notre Dame has strict standards, academic standards they have to live up to.
But Chris, Notre Dame doesn't play anybody.
Oklahoma plays in the Big 12. similar records, except for Oklahoma has more losses to teams that aren't very good. Except for Oklahoma just last year needed a heroic 4th-and-1 by Caleb Williams on a crazy broken play to beat Kansas. Oklahoma has no playoff wins. But Oklahoma also doesn't have the stringent academic standards that they have to uphold to. Those two schools are in a similar place. You know how I know? Because both coaches that were there, you know, that were probably winningest coaches and whatever since in the playoff era, they both left for opportunities because they felt like they were hitting a ceiling. Notre Dame and Oklahoma are step stool jobs. And I'd argue that Notre Dame has done better recently than Oklahoma has. Now, I can acknowledge the draft picks, but what matters to me here, Notre Dame wins all the games they're supposed to and then loses the teams, programs that are better than them. That's how Notre Dame operates. Oklahoma will drop a game, you'll be like, what the fuck? I mean, like in that same time period that I talked about, Oklahoma lost to that same Oklahoma State team that Notre Dame lost to. They both haven't won a playoff game. And then additionally, if you look a little bit deeper, Oklahoma in 2020 lost 2 games back-to-back to Kansas State and Iowa State. That should have never happened. That should have never been the case. They have about the same record since 2018. In fact, 2018, Oklahoma lost to Texas. They finished 9th in the AP poll, but they had a 10-4 record. They were just okay. It was Tom Herman's Texas team. He went on to go get fired. Just funny. It's funny to me how Lincoln Riley has been treated as kind of this quarterback guru. I know he's a younger coach. And then Brian Kelly's kind of, there's a lot of doubt about him in LSU. And I think he's going to be a good coach, but I think they're the same. I think they're similar programs. The issue is, I'm more impressed by Notre Dame because they're able to win and it is tougher for them to recruit. And things they matter less to Notre Dame than they should to Oklahoma. And it's like, oh, but the conference. Oh, but the Big 12's not very good. Lincoln Riley has no undefeated seasons in the Big 12. Not a single one. That's why I always hated the Lincoln Riley versus Ryan Day conversation. Because they both came in driving sports cars. They were both born on third base. And you know who's done better on third base? Ryan Day. The quarterback play's been better. The record's been better. And honestly, to me, that's kind of put to bed the rivalry. And then Ryan Day didn't bolt to go somewhere else after being born on third base. He didn't need a pinch runner. I am excited, though. I do think USC is going to do big things in the Big Ten, but just something of note that bothered me just a little bit in this world. Notre Dame is just Catholic Oklahoma. That's all they are. Take that for what you will. Speaking of Notre Dame, the game is 9 days away. We are so, so close. I'm looking forward to it. It's a big visit weekend as well. I'm not going to break down the game. I'm not going to preview it just because I think that Zach and I obviously will sit down and go through it. He'll go through it. I'll ask the questions, and we'll get you all the information you need. But I'll talk about the recruiting side of it. If you missed Tuesday's episode, go subscribe to the Patreon and go watch it back. It was a big-time episode. Went in-depth more about the recruits, what I was hearing from the foundation dinner, my talk with Brian Schottenstein, and with Kevin Wilson as well. Definitely go check it out. That is for the $5 on Patreon, and you can find us on socials. It's always there. /menace. So go sub to the Patreon. There's also a cool little forum we're in. Shout out to the Menace Generals out there. So shout out to my guy Brody, though, man. Brody, one of the locker boys, took the time to organize a list of the of the offers that are going to be on campus for that Notre Dame game. It's shaped up to be a very long list. Also, Brody has a bunch of supercuts of all of the games of certain players, if you want to go back and be a real football nerd and see plays from guys, including, you know, guys that don't get a ton of playing time. We might see a lot this year because I'm convinced that this season, a lot of players that we thought were not very good, we're going to see and be like, oh, okay, yeah, that player's pretty good. So for the 2023 class, the guys that we have coming in, we've got 3 defensive ends that are 5-stars, Damon Wilson, Mateo Uyunglele, and then Keon Keeley. Now, I think that Keon Keeley is gone one time in Notre Dame commit. I think he's going to Bama. But Mateo and Damon, all smiles over there. I feel really good about the one that I shared with. We're up to about 40 players total that are going to be making an unofficial or official visit for that Notre Dame game. And I know people are worried because obviously the infamous June trip that ended up not landing a lot of kids. We ended up with a lot of misses there. A lot of the worry there was it was too many people. It was unorganized, this, that, this, that. And it's like, okay, why is Ohio State lining up all of these? Well, they're not. Kids are requesting to go to this game. And it does more harm for Ohio State to say no to some than it does just let them all come in and try to manage that and let them see the atmosphere. And this is where my frustration with the Big Ten comes in. Because if the rest of the Big Ten was better, we could do bigger visit weekends throughout the year. But let's face it, the best two games on this schedule are Game 1 and the game in November against the team up north. Now, I'm not too worried about all these kids coming on the visit. Because really, if we bat 10% of 40, I don't know what that is, but that's four elite kids, you would think. I know Jeremiah Smith is on the way. Feel good about him. But no, I'm not too concerned about all these kids coming on this one visit. Because it does more harm, I think, to tell them no and send them away rather than have them come see it. And plus, I think this will be the most electric atmosphere in the horseshoe in actually quite a while. A top five matchup, week one, on what feels like the longest offseason ever, a scarlet out. It's going to be intense, and I know we have some guys that we should be able to pull, and I am excited about. I'll have more details on what I'm hearing leading up to that visit. Obviously, we'll get a little bit closer. We are 9 days away, 9 days away from football season. I am working on setting up an interview with my guy, Mario Perez. Obviously, we want to talk about those trio of freshmen at American Heritage that are absolutely exceptional. And shoot, before I get out of here, one more thing. I don't know if my episode is going to beat it out, but I think what's really going to help our recruiting is I think, you know, deciphering through some tweets, do not be surprised here soon if there's a big NIL deal coming for every kid on the team for Ohio State. And when that news breaks, I expect that'll shake up the internet a little bit, and it might be a little bit higher than some people think for all the players on the team, maybe being at what we would call a minimum. So just get ready, because that news is incoming, my guess is, at some point today when this show comes out. And then again, that'll obviously help recruiting greatly. A little bit of insight from the foundation land or wherever the money's coming from, because who knows. But anyway, until I'm back next time, I'll be back later today on Zach's show. And then obviously, Patreon subscribers will get another show on Tuesday. Chris Drew, Chris's Corner, Menace out.
Some people think they're God.
N-I-L.
You're going to see more transfers, more mistakes made in recruiting.
Big Chris Drew.
You're taking shots at 17-year-old kids and their families.
Chris Drew, Daddy.
Let them be committed 100 times.
Texas A&M bought their players.
We bought every player on this group. When people show you who they are, believe it.
All the NIL did was made it legal for student athletes to get paid. Because this has been going on for the longest time. And then the really big school came in and built a damn house around the microwave and refrigerator.
They did.
A baseball card.
Yep.
So now all of a sudden, Coach Saban, Texas A&M, every guy they got. So you mean to tell me the man that signed more 5, 4, and 5-star recruits than everybody went there because they love Alabama.